Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Good to talk to you today.
Absolutely.
Well, welcome to today's episode of Coaching Perspective. And our topic for today is from gladiator to mediator to coach with our guest, Nancy Foster, JD. You know, Nancy has been mediating divorce, family, business, and organizational disputes since 1988. Her passion is empathy and communication skills, and she has been studying and applying coaching skills to her role as a mediator. And she has coached communication skills at the National Institute for Trial Advocacy and numerous law schools. And we're going to get with Nancy in just a minute. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I'm a Master Certified Coach with the International Coach Federation, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California, all under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. And if you'd like to know more about our coaching services, please go to our website, www.thecoachingperspective.com, or you can always just give me a call the old-fashioned way, 714-726-8354. Well, let's get back to Nancy. She's got a very impressive bio here, and I want to just highlight a few of those things before I bring her on the air. She is the director of the Northern California Mediation Center. She also practices as a collaborative divorce attorney. She received her law degree from the University of Michigan Law School and then practiced commercial litigation, securities, and real estate law for over 10 years prior to becoming a mediator. She's taught at the Pepperdine University School of Law, the Academy of Family Mediators, and the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts. She's, as I mentioned, she specializes in the study of communication skills. She's coached those skills at the National Institute for Trial Advocacy and at the law schools at Hastings, Bolt Hall, UC Davis, and Stanford. She serves on the mediation panels of a number of organizations, the U.S. District Court for Northern California, California Court of Appeal for the First Appellate Court, and on and on. Nancy is also past president of the Northern California Mediation Association and past vice president of the Marin County Women Lawyers. She's a member of the Marin County Bar Association, Family Law Section, and program chair of the ADR Section. She's an advanced practitioner of the Association for Conflict Resolution, Family Section, serves as a secretary on the board of Collaborative Practice Marin. I'm exhausted. Nancy, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Wow. And I forgot to mention the most important thing. Nancy is one of my new friends. I met Nancy through a coaching class we were taking together, and I was so impressed with her and asked her what she did and then got even more curious, and we've got her on the air today. So, Nancy, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show.
Well, thank you so much. My pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's ours. Well, look, let's just dive right in. Tell our audience a little bit about your path to your current business model. That sounds like a lot of different twists there in that path.
Right, right. Well, you mentioned, after I graduated from law school, I worked in a large San Francisco law firm and did commercial litigation. And then I also worked in a large corporation doing securities, and then a moderate-sized corporation doing real estate syndication. And I actually, it was also one thing I didn't put on there, I was a member of a group called Lawyers in Transition, and it was all the unhappy lawyers who were trying to find an alternative, something else that they could focus on that would really speak to their heart and allow them to be, you know, to express themselves more authentically. And so we would have different people who were lawyers but were doing non-lawyer type things. And that's where I first got introduced to mediation. When I was in law school, I never heard the word mediation. And so I ended up going and taking my first mediation training. And when I came home and walked in the door, my husband took one look at me and said, gosh, you look so focused. I mean, before I said a word. And I had found what I wanted to do. So
isn't that exciting?
Yes, it really was. And I feel like I have been doing right livelihood. And so that is, I'm very grateful for that every day. And
well, look.
So then I wasn't too long after I started mediating. I became associated with the Northern California Mediation Center. And at that time, there wasn't much mediation going on in the business world or in commercial litigation. And so when I looked around, it seemed like the only people making a living at it were doing divorce mediation. And although I had never practiced family law, and I had told myself I would never want to be a litigator in family law, I found it to be entirely different when I started doing divorce mediation. Actually, that part of family law is very interesting. It's very diverse. There's property law and tax and custody and support, and it's very relevant to one's personal life. So that was really, I was enjoying that. It was shortly after I started practicing mediation, I was then asked to start training as well. And so I've been doing divorce mediation and trainings, and then in the last 10, 12, 15 years, I can't remember when I started, then I was introduced to collaborative divorce, and that's been another whole opening for me. And because after 20-some years of mediating, I was feeling like I wanted something a little different, and that's when I discovered collaborative divorce. And then I got to work on teams with mental health professionals and financial specialists, as well as other collaborative attorneys. And so that was really exciting. And actually, I'm now president of the Collaborative Practice Marin Group. I have to update my bio, I think, on my website. And and then it's been more recently that I took a coaching training. It wasn't not specifically to be a coach, but it was Mastering Life's Energies with Maria Nemeth. And I was really, really taken with that. And then, sometime about a year ago, I was at a party and was talking to a coach and talking about Maria Nemeth. And she then told me about this, the ORSC, which is Organization and Relationship Systems Coaching. And she said that she felt that these people knew more about relationships than anybody else. So that really intrigued me. And I also, as a lawyer, I've never really studied family systems, and I realized I really wanted to know more about systems. So that's what took me into getting more serious about doing coaching training. And I must say, when I took my first coaching training, I felt as on fire and passionate about coaching as I did about mediation.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Well, look, Nancy, a couple of things before we get into it. You talked about collaborative practice. Can you explain a little bit more? Because that's mediation. I'm not even sure I know how that works. I know the term, but collaborative is a new one for me. What is that all about?
Okay. So collaborative practice, I kind of see it as collaborative practice is for clients who know they don't want to go to court, but somehow feel like they need support, more support than they'll get in mediation. So I see as collaborative practice has been built on the shoulders of mediation. And it has a lot of the same values and a lot of the same goals. But in collaborative divorce, each person has their own collaboratively trained attorney, so somebody who has made a paradigm shift into how to try to work cooperatively and collaboratively rather than adversarially.
Okay.
And then there can also be either a single mental health professional acting as a coach, a neutral coach, or each client can have a mental health professional acting as a divorce coach. There can be a child specialist who is also a mental health professional who will be the voice of the children and will meet with the children and then feedback information to the parents and to the other professional team members. And there can be a financial specialist. And the financial specialist is really the only true neutral in collaborative divorce, whereas in mediation, the mediator is the neutral. So it's a whole team. So the idea is that divorce is not just a legal process and a financial process. It's also an emotional process. And to have specialists in all of those three areas who will work together as a team to help a family move from a pre-divorce family to a post-divorce family and still be a functional family.
It sounds like you could have a crowded room at times.
At times, yes. And so sometimes you might have 7 or 8-way meetings, but sometimes you'll have 4-way meetings. It might be the 2 attorneys and the 2 clients, it might be the 2 coaches and the 2 clients, or it might be a neutral coach and and the 2 clients and the attorneys, or it might be just the financial specialist with the 2 clients. So it's very flexible. And the idea is try to figure out what does this particular couple or family need to help them move most effectively through the process.
So in your practice today, where's the majority of your time being spent, and who are your typical clients, and how do they find you?
Well, it has varied. At times I could say it was half and half collaboration and mediation. Right now it's more mediation than collaboration. Plus I do the trainings. We do probably about 8 trainings a year, and 2 of which are 40-hour mediation trainings. And so most of my clients, the majority of my clients are divorce mediation clients, although since I have the commercial litigation background, I also do a variety of other types of mediation. But that the business or commercial mediations are very different from the divorce mediation. The business mediations might be, you know, one day and get it done. And with the attorneys involved, the attorneys representing the clients and who are there, and there might be insurance adjusters and just a lot of people in the room. Whereas in divorce mediation, the way I practice it is most people come to me because they don't want to have lawyers involved. And sometimes, I encourage them to have consulting attorneys that they can talk to at any time during the process. They usually don't want to bring their consulting attorneys in with them. And so I'm usually working, directly with them. And the people find me, I've been doing it for over 25 years. So lots of times people are sent by word of mouth. We were probably one of the first mediation websites on the internet. So people, they look for mediation in Marin County or Northern California, they're going to find us. So I used to get a lot of people, like a third of my clients from the Yellow Pages. Now I would say about a third from the internet, and then by word of mouth and by referrals.
Now, you mentioned internet. I'm assuming that in your collaborative and in your mediation practice that it is all face-to-face, that none of this is being done remotely or virtual.
That's pretty much true. Sometimes if I've been meeting with clients, I will, and then one has to be traveling or one is moving to another state. Sometimes I will do it on the phone, on the speakerphone, just like this, and have them both call in. I almost always try to have at least one face-to-face meeting with them. I just feel like I need to know who I'm working with.
Okay.
Just better for me. Now, there is online mediation happening, and I've just chosen not to do it. I just... I just like the personal interaction better. And it's harder, it's easier for people to act out when they don't have the other person in the room that is also going to be responding immediately. I mean, I really feel that a lot of what I offer is my presence, and it's harder to offer that on the internet.
You know, before we went on the air, Nancy, I talked to you about this next question, which we've asked all our guests, and that is a particular experience that sort of set a guiding principle for you. What would that have been? Can you share that with us?
Well, I would say early on, after my first several mediation trainings, I got together with a group of other attorney mediators, and we engaged a psychotherapist who was in the business of teaching therapists about empathy skills. And we asked, so there were about 6 to 10 of us attorney mediators, and we asked him to work with us and teach us empathy skills. And he really liked working with attorneys because he found that we were much more precise in our language than most therapists are. And that really interested him. And we ended up working with him probably about once every 6 weeks. We would get together for about 3 hours, and we would practice empathy skills on each other. Now, when I say empathy skills, I have a very specific meaning for that. It's really demonstrating understanding. So some people call it active listening, some people call it reflective listening or summarizing, but really the idea is to prove. I mean, when I was a baby mediator, I felt I was a pretty understanding person, but what I've learned is you can't just say, oh, I understand, or feel that you've understood. You have to prove to the person you're listening to that you've understood them. And the only way to do that is to listen carefully to what they're saying and then reflect back in your own words both the content and the feeling that they are saying and conveying, and in a way that they could say that's basically accurate. That is a key critical skill that mediators need to learn. And in our mediation trainings, we teach that at the very beginning, and we are giving constant feedback to people on that through our 5-day training and through all the role plays. So I would say that experience of, that's what made me feel really confident and competent as a mediator. And I would say anybody who's not a therapist, so a lot of lawyers or business people who go into mediation, I really feel that they need to spend a lot of time training themselves in communication skills, and particularly in being able to demonstrate understanding.
And you know what, the way you just explained that, I could just as easily have been sitting in a coaching class listening to someone explain one of the key concepts of how to be a good coach. So
yeah, and you know, as I go, I keep trying to look, okay, what are the similarities? What are the differences? And there's really a lot of similarities between mediation and coaching. And when I went and took my first coaching training at ORSC, most of the other people were coaches or organizational development people, and I was thinking, ooh, you know, I'm the only lawyer, the only mediator. And but I realized I felt pretty comfortable right away. I did not feel like I was out of sync or out of my milieu. And I was used to, so this was, you know, relationship systems coaching. I was used to sitting with two people and helping them work things out, whereas many of the coaches were strictly doing one-on-one coaching. And so that was a big stretch for them to now work with two people.
Yeah, and I don't want to embarrass you here, but I'll just share with the audience that you and I were on a practice call what we call a triad, where one person is functioning as the coach, another is the client, and another person is the observer. And I was the client, and you were the coach. And you did this masterful job of coaching me on the issue we were talking about. And it wasn't till the end of the call that I realized, found out that you were not a coach. And I was frankly just blown away by that, because your skill set was right there with the best of coaches that I've ever worked with. So I think there's a tremendous amount of similarity between what obviously what you've done as a mediator and what you're finding that coaches do. Have you found any differences between the two? Any areas that where they're kind of in conflict or they don't share the same values?
Well, I wouldn't say exactly conflict, but there are some differences. I think, and you know, what I've also realized is there's different kinds of coaching and there's different kinds of mediation. So if I think of coaching in terms of the object is to facilitate awareness and personal growth in the client, that's not really, in mediation, we're really working on facilitating communication between two or more people, problem solving, and coming to some kind of resolution of the dispute. Now, different kinds of mediation might really focus on transforming the relationship. So again, there's just this whole spectrum of different kinds of mediation. But I think I'm looking at other definitions of coaching, and they say it's collaborative, it's solution-focused, it's results-oriented, and it involves a systematic process where you can say all those same things for mediation. I really emphasize transparency in mediation, and both are voluntary. I think coaching tends to work on developmental work with a client over time, whereas in mediation, people usually have come to mediation to resolve a dispute or to settle a lawsuit, and so it's more limited in time. So, you know, some commercial or business mediations will be one day. Those might be 10-hour days. but it's generally it's a lot of people you're trying to get in the room together. It's really hard to schedule, so you get everybody together and you keep them there until it gets resolved. In divorce mediation, I usually meet with people for 1.5 to 2 hour sessions, and I would say that there's probably somewhere between 3 to 8 sessions, depending on the complexity of the situation. Some people do it in less, and some people take a lot longer. But we divide it up over time, because I want people, I often tell them, even if you make an agreement in one session of mediation, I want you to be able to go home and sleep on that. I consider it a tentative agreement until you've had time to think on it. So we spread it out, and it's not, and I think in coaching, people tend to meet weekly or have phone calls weekly in like 45 to 60 minute sessions. And whereas in like divorce mediation, we'll just see when at the end of one session, we'll see, well, how much time do they need to do their homework, and what is their schedule like and my schedule like, and often people are coming kind of once every 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, or then something might have to happen, and they might have to get a business evaluated or a house appraised, they want to take time for that to happen, and so maybe 3 weeks or four weeks will go by. Also, sometimes people come in and have one session, and they go away for a year because they're just not ready yet, and then they come back and then do it. So I imagine that happens in coaching too. Sometimes people do some coaching for a while, then they'll stop, and then they'll go back and do some coaching.
So the purpose behind coaching and the purpose behind mediation are very, very different. Mediation is very directly problem solving with probably a relatively short time frame. But what about the skills that you've become aware of that coaches use? Are they not Are they helpful in the mediation process?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why I think that they have skills that I want to learn more about. So, but it's clearly good listening. And also, in our mediation trainings, we tell people, if there's only two things you learn in this five-day training, they are, one, learning about empathy and how to do that. And the second is learning about interests. And mediation is based on, it's really a form of assisted negotiation. And it's really based on interest-based negotiation, as opposed to rights-based or adversarial negotiation. So learning what the difference between a position and an interest. And a position is usually what people come in and say they want. And the interest is the reason why they want it. It's the underlying driver. And when you get good at it, you learn to peel the onion and find deeper and deeper interests until you get down to the basic human need. And that facilitates, the more interests you uncover in a mediation, the more possibilities there are for people to come up with different options so that they can actually reach what our goal is, a mutually acceptable, durable agreement. So you're right. It is really to resolve something, finding out how conflict. There's really a system. I'm becoming more and more aware. I mean, or I want to learn more about the system that's between the people in conflict, and how to coach that system so that they can resolve.
You know, and I think you touched on this earlier, too, and my own experience is that there is a big difference between one-on-one coaching and when you are coaching multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute you start coaching multiple people, then you're also working with, as you call it, the system. And that system needs to be brought forth and recognized and coached as intently, in my mind, as if it was another person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
right.
But I love the way you talk about the mediation in terms of it being interest driven, and the more you can peel back and find interest, the more opportunity there is for reaching resolution. And I think there's a similarity there with coaching in that it isn't the coach's job to come up with the solution. It's the coach's job to peel back the issue and expose to the client what the obstacles are that are keeping them from arriving at a solution so that they can then come up with the best solution.
And that's exactly our focus in mediation. It's decision-making remains with the clients.
Yeah.
The mediator is not telling them what to do, not giving them advice. But really empowering them to resolve this themselves, and with the belief that they have the answers to their issue, and they know better. They know their system much better than a third person who's just being introduced to their system.
And which so is the really basic, which is the basic premise of all coaching, that the client is healthy and well and fully capable of solving their own problems. You're just working with them to identify and to clear and give them a perspective or different perspective so that they can come up with that solution that they're so capable of arriving at.
Absolutely, and we also know that not everybody can be coached and not everybody can mediate. So if people can't mediate, I mean, the court system is there as the default and the backup. And mediation and probably coaching kind of works for people. It doesn't work on the extremes. People who are extremely passive and unengaged, people who are extremely volatile, extremely angry, and so the emotions are just flooding them and they can't process or they can't function. But both mediation and coaching are really about the process. that the process, well, again, there's different kinds of mediation. There are more directive mediators, and you'll find more of those with the retired judges and in the commercial litigation area. You know, the way I practice is trying to be facilitative and really helping people. I believe if I can help people really understand each other, understand themselves better, and understand each other, that much of the conflict goes away. Like 50%, I think the majority of conflict is about misunderstanding. So the first thing we have to do is eliminate the misunderstanding. And then we're left with what the real conflict is about. And sometimes the conflict just goes away. And so part of what I'm trying to do is to help people, and also providing a structure so that I take seriously the goals that they say they want to achieve. So I see my job as helping keep them on track. And but they're always a choice whether they're going to stay on track or not. But I talk to them about, you know, if you want to avoid going off in emotional cul-de-sacs, then I can, you know, that's what I see is I'm offering to them, is they can avoid that if they follow the structure and take coaching from me. So, I do see a mediator is acting as a coach, a communication coach, a negotiation coach, and a relationship systems coach.
Well, you're playing right into my basic belief, which is that I think everybody in almost every field would be better off if they had some coaching training. Just because
I often say to people, you know, even if you take our mediation training and then you decide, one thing you'll learn is, do you want to be a mediator or not? And even if you decide not to be a mediator, or you just don't become a mediator, you don't move in that direction, you will learn life skills. And those will be applicable in all areas of your life. And I've had attorneys who've taken the training and chose not to mediate, but they said it completely changed how they practiced law, because they now knew how to communicate with other counsel better, with their clients better. They just became more self-aware. And we know that that's a key, self-awareness to success in life.
Nancy, I want to go back. You made a comment early on this conversation, and there were a couple things going on. I didn't get to write it down, but you were talking about empathy, and you used a phrase that talked somehow about earning the client's confidence or trust.
Yeah.
Does that ring a bell with you?
Well, I was talking about, I define empathy as demonstrating understanding.
Yes.
And so I think of it as like Aikido. And I don't know if you're familiar with Aikido or your listeners are familiar with Aikido, but it's a Japanese martial art. And one of the things that distinguishes Aikido from other martial arts, it's never offensive. It's only responsive. And so in Aikido, if an enemy or someone is coming at you, instead of our kind of normal reaction as a human being might be to push back, to strike back, etc. But instead of doing that, in Aikido, you shift your position quickly, line up with the person coming at you, the attacker, you read their energy, and then you move them with their energy. You move with their energy to put them wherever you need to put them to protect yourself or whatever. That's how I see the use of empathy. It's by... Most people come into mediation and they have not been heard by the other person. They have not been validated by the other person for years, maybe. And it's the first time in a long time that somebody actually listens to them and hears them and demonstrates by reflecting back to them the mediator's understanding of what they said, so that they actually feel heard. And you can almost see the difference in people. They come in all tense and tight, and you know, quiet or, you know, tight-lipped, and you can begin to, you see their body begin to relax when the mediator demonstrates understanding. Now, it's a little different in one-on-one coaching. You don't have the other person in the room, so you have to learn to do this so that you're empathizing with both people and that they're not thinking that you're siding with one or the other. But once people feel understood, then it helps the mediator build rapport. And I was just reading about how the relationship between the coach and the client is really so important in coaching. And having as a mediator, having rapport with both parties is essential. Or they need to trust the mediator. And this is a person who can understand me. This is a person who is not going to take sides. This is a person who's really going to be helpful and cares that about me and about us.
You know, this. I am just sitting here chuckling because, you know, you're talking coaching language. You're talking coaching principles, and I can see why you've gotten interested in finding out more about coaching, because the parallel is just unbelievably close here.
Yeah, and I can see that coaches could be very interested in becoming mediators.
Yeah. Though that was one of the things that why I wanted you on the show, because it wasn't anything I ever thought of doing or that I ever heard of other coaches thinking of doing. And yet, all of a sudden, it's the similarities here. This demonstrating understanding is and reflecting back is so key to coaching and so important. Let me ask you this. Do you ever, you know, one of the key things that I find in working with clients, not necessarily sometimes between me as the coach and the client, but many times between the client and whoever or whatever they're having a problem with, is that the alliance hasn't been clearly laid out between the parties, the working relationship, the expectations, whatever you want to call it. What do you do as a mediator in the start of your relationship to define the alliance, the roles that the people are going to play? Can you speak to that for a minute?
Well, the first part of my first session is, I call it the contracting session, because that's when I'm really talking. I mean, they do have a written contract, but I don't have them sign it until they come in and we talk about it. So I'm really explaining to them what mediation is, what it isn't, and what my role is, what their role is. And I usually say their role is twofold. One is they need to be willing and able to listen to each other respectfully and try to understand the other's perspective even if they disagree. And I make a big distinction between understanding and agreeing. And some people can't make that distinction, and they're probably not good candidates for mediation. So in other words, they need to be able to see more than one perspective. They need to be open to being impacted by the other person and open to seeing the other person's perspective, and they can still and not lose their own. So that's one thing they need to be able to do. And the other thing is, I call mutuality. It's important that they're willing to come up with ideas and options that are going to work for the other person as well as for themselves. And some people, and especially in divorce, I sometimes will say to people, if you have a need for revenge and punishment, you're not going to get that need met in mediation. So it needs to be on the back burner and not operational anymore. Because what makes this work is the goal is to reach a mutually acceptable, durable agreement. And if you're willing to hang in and collaborate, not just compromise, but collaborate so that each of you can get your most important interest met. That's why it's important to understand what the interest is, explaining to them what the different roles are, and then creating, asking them to create what in ORSC we would call designing the team alliance or designing the partnership alliance. and asking them, what do each of them need to feel more comfortable sitting in the room with the same person they're in conflict with? What will help them do that? And then I help them design that and then remind them of that in each succeeding mediation session.
Okay. Nancy, you mentioned a phrase that you talk to them about being a good candidate for mediation. Do you ever find people that you early on say, I can't take you, your expectations aren't going to be met through our mediation process?
Well, I usually let them come to that conclusion. I don't usually say, no, I'm not going to do this. But I will be pretty frank with them. Like, for example, many people choose mediation because it's less expensive than having two attorneys than collaborative divorce or having two attorneys in kind of an adversarial divorce. And that's legitimate, but if that is their only reason for choosing mediation, I will be frank with them and tell them, I think it's not a strong enough reason to keep you in the room. Their needs, I want to find out what their motivation is. It might be to avoid court. It might be they really want to protect their children. It might be they just don't want to tear each other apart. So they can have a lot of different reasons, and saving money can definitely be one of them. But if it's the only reason, I'll be frank with them. And then I'll ask them, do you have any other reasons? So often, I usually give people a chance, but usually by the third session, we know if it's going to work or not.
Okay. Well, look, as we get ready to wrap up here, Nancy, is there anything else that you want to share or anything I interrupted you on that you want to, want to go back and reinforce with our audience?
Well, there was just one thing when you were asking about what are some of the differences. It's confidentiality, and I understand that in coaching, confidentiality is by contract. But in mediation, particularly in California, there is a statute that provides for confidentiality, and what that means, because we're often dealing with a legal dispute, is that anything that's said in the mediation, anything that's written in the mediation, anything that's prepared or produced for the mediation is not admissible in court if things fall out of mediation. And so that means if somebody says something there, it can't be in the mediation, it can't be used against them in court, that, like as an admission against interest. They can't call me as a witness as to what went on in mediation. And so there's a statute that provides a protected, safe place for people to see if they can work something out. And California has one of the strongest confidentialities. I think that's about it.
Okay. I'll tell you, I think this has been fascinating. And the very subject of mediation and collaborative mediation is thank you for sharing that. I know it wasn't something I was totally familiar with. I'm sure people in our audience weren't. And for our coaches in the audience, the similarities and the application of coaching techniques to mediation is very intriguing, and maybe even opens up some doors or opportunities to some of the people in our audience to sort of broaden out in what they're doing. So I really appreciate you sharing all of that knowledge and experience with us today.
Great. And another thing I do, I hold monthly brown bag lunches for people who are interested in mediation. Now, they have to get here. I'm in Northern California in Marin County, San Rafael. But it's free. It's an hour and a half. And I get people from all walks of life who are curious. It's like a group informational interviewing process. And a lot of people ask, well, do you have to be a lawyer in order to be a mediator? And I'm frank with them in saying, well, if you're doing cases that have a legal component to it, it's easier if you're a lawyer just because people often think they need a lawyer. But I do know people who aren't lawyers who have become divorce mediators, have become commercial mediators, and also organizational conflict. So if you have a niche, I often encourage people, if they're really interested in getting into the field, if they have a niche that they already have developed, that's a good place to begin to start offering mediation services. Of course, first you need a mediation training, and probably more than one. But the other thing, just to know, you and anybody listening can call themselves a mediator in the state of California. There's no regulation of mediation in the state. So, so people are often surprised when they come to my brown bag and I tell them that. And I said, you can call yourself a mediator right now and hang out a shingle. Now, we don't encourage that. No professional mediator would encourage that. Because mediation is really, it's different from settlement conferences like lawyers are used to. It's different from couples counseling like therapists are used to. And it's different from, there are differences from coaching, although I think coaching is much closer to mediation than either of those two things that I just mentioned.
Okay. Well, another similarity between coaching and mediation, they're both self-regulated and self-organized. Nancy, I thank you again for taking the time. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, and I just want to welcome you to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show community. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Doug.
Oh, thank you. And have a great evening.
You too.
All right. Well, if you've just tuned in, you've been listening to Nancy Foster talk about mediation and coaching and the similarities between those. You missed a great conversation, but you really haven't missed it because all of our shows are available as podcasts. You can get them on our website, thecoachingperspective.com, or you can go to our archive storage site, which is dgfeller.podbean.com, and you can find all of our shows there. So this is Doug Gefeller saying I hope you enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller, right here in Orange County's only community radio station.